The Buddha often compared himself to a doctor. The Dharma is medicine. And it's important to think about the implications of that analogy. Think about medical science. What kind of science is it? Some people say that it's not a science, it's an art. It's not the sort of science that's based on first principles and works deductively from those principles. It's based on what's worked in the past. Experimenting, see how much of, say, of a particular medicine is useful for one kind of disease and how it can actually be harmful for other kinds of diseases. When you give a dosage of a medicine, it doesn't necessarily mean that if a small dose works pretty well, that a bigger dose is going to work even better. Sometimes the bigger dose gets harmful, poisonous, can actually kill you. So an important principle in medicine is balance. It's like the difference between logic and reason. Logic argues from first principles. Reason, however, deals with what, with ratios, keeping things in balance. You might say the Buddha's teaching is reasonable, not necessarily logical, but it's reasonable. It works because it finds a balance. If you're looking for logic, you can look to the way the Buddha practiced for those 6 years before he found the true path. If our problem is attachment to pleasures, he said, well, let's just totally avoid all kinds of pleasure. He tried to deny all the processes of the body. He tried to stop breathing. For a while, he was going to stop eating. The devas came and said, well, if you stop eating, we're going to pour divine nutrient into your pores. So he said, well, I'll just live on as little as possible. And so he carried the logic of self-torture all the way to its extreme and found that it didn't work. That was when he realized that logic was not the key to the end of suffering. Why he ultimately came up with the middle way. It's a balanced path. It's a reasonable path. It takes virtue, concentration, and discernment and puts them in a reasonable context. Again, the Jains often complained to the Buddha that his precepts were sloppier than theirs. But again, they took the idea of harmlessness to totally useless extremes. It was logical, but it was useless. It didn't work. Same with concentration. You get the mind into a dead concentration where you're totally no sense of the body at all. We take the mind into a state of what's called total non-perception. And it's such a wrong state of concentration that the Buddha doesn't even list it among the stages of right concentration. So when working with a practice here, we realize that we're working with a series of principles that have been worked out over time. They're taught because they work. The Buddha's proof for his teachings is not so much logical as it is pragmatic. In his teachings to the Gautamas, everyone focuses on the fact that he says, don't go by text, don't go by reports, don't go by received tradition, or simply because your teacher says something is good. We often forget to look at the other side of the equation. He says, also don't go by things because they're logical or because they seem reasonable to you. Well, they go in line with your notions, your ideas. You follow the Dharma that works. If it puts an end to suffering, okay, that's the Dharma. And the history of Buddhism is a history of a lot of people who've rebelled against that. Either they try to make the Buddhist system out into a totally logical system, or they like showing that it has its logical flaws. Basically destroy the path by saying, well, that's illogical, this is illogical. And as a result, they get put themselves in a position where they can't put an end to suffering. So our training here is training in what works. It means finding a balance. Right concentration is a matter of balance. A certain amount of holding on, a certain amount of letting go. Letting go of unskillful things, holding on to things that are skillful, things at work. From a logical point of view, it may seem deficient, but it actually works. It gets the mind in a position where it can see what's actually going on, particularly in terms of its intentions. Right concentration is a very strong example of working on your intention, keeping your intention steady. But balanced in a way that you can not only can be still, but you can also see things moving. When the Buddha talks about right concentration, five-factored right concentration, there are the four jhanas, and then there's this other stage where he talks about the mind having its theme well in hand. And the analogy he gives is a person who's sitting down who's watching a person who's lying down, or a person who's standing who's watching a person who's sitting, slightly stepped back from the action, watching the action. That's the state in which the mind can really see itself. And the whole point of this is seeing how the intentions of the mind shape things. And to see precisely where those intentions cause stress and where they're unnecessary. That requires a great deal of balance, a great deal of skill. It's an art. The whole path is an art. And like any science, like any craft, any art, it has its basic principles, but it's not something that's hammered out from first principles to their logical conclusion. It has its consistency. It has its balance. Things are in proportion. And that's a lot more difficult than logic. Logic is something any adolescent can master. It's that adolescent part of the mind that likes to point out the logical flaws in your parents' program for making you an adult. What takes maturity is reason, balance, seeing what works and sticking with what works. Appreciating the value of what works. Because after all, the whole point of the Dharma is not that it's going to win out in logical debates. The Buddha actually discouraged his students from getting involved in logical debates because it's bad for the state of your intention. You might win the debate, but you lose the battle in trying to put an end to suffering. What he did encourage them in was getting a sense of the middle way. The times when you have to put in a great deal of effort, and other times when effort gets in the way, when you simply have to watch. In the sutta where he talks about this, he doesn't give hard and fast rules about this. You have to watch what's going on in your mind and the results that are gained. If you find that following your pleasure leads to defilement in the mind, well, okay, you've got to fight your pleasure. You can kind of deprive yourself of that particular pleasure. If you find that working with pleasure actually helps you see things, okay, that's a pleasure to be encouraged. Some defilements, you say, respond to strong effort. Other defilements don't. You have to simply watch them. And the way you find out which is which is by observing the results of your actions in your mind. The emphasis always keeps coming back here, back here, back here, to your intentions and their results. And having a logical system can get in the way. Insisting that everything be logical gets in the way. The onus is on you. You have to be observant. You have to be true to yourself. When you do this, what is your intention? Because this is an area where we tend to hide from ourselves. And when you act on an intention, what kind of results do you get? Again, this is an area that we tend to hide from ourselves. This is where most of our psychological dishonesty lies. And that's precisely the ignorance that we're trying to overcome. So the test of the Buddha's teachings is not so much whether it's logically consistent as whether it actually gets the results. You follow the precepts, you follow the teachings on concentration, you follow the questioning that leads to discernment. It's as if the Buddha challenges you. Okay? He says, you follow this line of action, which is something fabricated, but it can take you to something unfabricated. Logically, it may seem strange that something fabricated can lead to something unfabricated, but the Buddha said causality works that way. And modern studies in complex causality, chaos theory, chemical states that are far from equilibrium, works in this way. There are these places called resonance, where the equation that describes the behavior of things in that field hits a spot where something is being divided by zero, and that takes things out of the system. And you get to that spot by following the rules of the system, but it leads you out. This is what the Buddha discovered. There's certain modes of action, which he taught as the middle way, would lead you to that spot where suddenly the mind is undefined. Everything gets undefined. It works because that's the way things are. And if you looked at things in logical terms, it might seem arbitrary, but it's what actually works. It's not a question of believing or not believing the Buddha. It's more of a question of taking his teachings and putting them to the test, putting yourself to the test at the same time. Why? Because he says this is the end of suffering, the end of the biggest problem in our lives. And we have to decide for ourselves whether we're intrigued by that possibility, whether we're attracted to that possibility. Or whether we'd rather hold to our old opinions. That's the choice that each of us has to make.